It's all very interesting. I think that I don't really think anything is going to change in the competition scene. I don't see it happening.
Importantly, this does bring us back around to aliens.
Okay.
We might be able to make contact if we just get our pipes to the correct pitch.
Yes, I think so. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Andrew.
It's a great day to be alive.
Great day to be alive. Good day to hydrate.
Good day to hydrate. And then also, you're back from the brink of death.
Oh, man, it was unfair. I went from being sick to being okay for 2 days and then got sick again. And it's just, I think it goes with the territory of having so many kids who go to public schools and bring back the germs and stuff. But my goodness.
Yep, it's not. It's good. I think it's probably, as long as you live, it's good. Immune system's getting stronger.
That, exactly. Yeah, if it didn't kill me, I'm surely, I don't feel stronger right now. But I'll just tell myself that's what's happening.
Well, talking with me will make you feel stronger, Jim.
That's it. That's what'll do it. Absolutely.
Yep. What's on the slate today?
Well, your friend and mine, Andy, sent in a message to the show, and we love it. So anybody who's hearing this, feel free to send us a message anytime. We'd love to interact. And this is what Andy says. He says, "Hey, I know it's personal preference, but why have bagpipes become so sharp? I still love playing at 474 to 476 hertz, but when judges hear your pipes at this pitch compared to everyone else, you get slagged. Besides, how much more difficult is it to balance your top hand to your bottom hand? I guess I'm old, ... You and me both, Andy. You and me both. I also guess I'm old."
Yeah. Old, but getting younger by the day.
Yeah. Every time I get sick, I get a little younger.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right here, Andrew, actually, one of these sets of pipes has a A440 chanter plugged into it. Mm-hmm. So this is something that's been on my mind anyway. I play other instruments. I like the idea of concert pitch. And I feel like when I put a B-flat chanter into my pipes, it sounds different, but I'm like, oh, it's like full, rich, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The 440, dude, it's funny because I play other stuff. This organ here is at 440. So why would it sound weird to me? I'm just used to bagpipes being up higher. And so it sounds like it's honking. It's funny that it makes my Highland pipes sound kind of like border pipes in some ways.
For sure. Let's start with some extremely amateurish history here. Okay.
That's the best kind.
Then we'll go into some slightly less amateurish.
Are you going to tell me it was aliens?
What's
aliens,
that?
Right?
Well, first of all, here's the first thing folks got to remember. Thing number one is I don't think the bagpipes ever, as we know them, like the great Highland bagpipe, okay? Mm-hmm. Like the one that was being played, let's say, in the Highlands of Scotland and what's today like Northern Ireland and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the one that's evolved to be passed down to this one instrument that we all play that's basically identical. Obviously, there's a trillion different other types of bagpipes. But the ones that we know, I don't think they ever really played in A440.
Mm, good point.
Yeah, I don't think that was ever really a thing. You can kind of tell that it wouldn't have been a thing because, Jim, your A440 chanter, your fingers have to be spread uncomfortably far apart to play it, right?
Yeah, it's noticeably different. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think people nowadays are a lot larger than people 400 and 500 years ago. Hashtag.
Oh, yeah. You ever go to a really old building or like a museum that has like furniture from several hundred years ago?
It's tiny.
It's so tiny. Yeah. Yeah. Or shoes from way back then. Yeah.
Yeah. Hashtag nutrition. Hashtag fruits and vegetables. Right.
It's a big difference.
But anyway, so the A440 chanter, even for people now, is uncomfortably large and difficult to play. So I think. And by the way, I've also read things about this in various places, can't remember where. But the bottom line is bagpipes were never really quite A440. But the bagpipe and bagpipe culture, which by the way, I think this is probably the main reason a lot of people find it so interesting, is the bagpipe music and culture evolved separately from most of Western music, right? Western music as we know it, Mozart and symphonies and all this kind of stuff, it was parallel evolving, right? There wasn't a lot of mixture of the two cultures only until later when people started to show up in the Highlands and, wow, this bagpipe stuff's kind of weird and interesting and also would be totally different from the types of music they were used to. And then you start to get these ideas, right? Bagpipe music, we should write it down on the staff. So in the early 1800s, if my extremely amateurish history is correct, in the early 1800s, it started to be in vogue and it started to be a fad to start to talk about writing bagpipe music down on the staff. And it was probably only then that the scale as we know it really emerged. And then this note here with the one pinky up at the bottom, the note that the drone's tuned to, it was probably when you played a piano, right? The note A. The note A was probably the closest note to where bagpipes were tuning at the time, right?
That's a good point.
And that's probably why we call it A. It's probably not because people hanging out in the Highlands playing bagpipes only were specifically concerned with tuning to A440. It's probably not really what was going on. It was probably the pitch of the note. Heck, it might even have been closer to B flat, but it's just easier to notate in A. Mm. It might also be part of it. You never know. And a lot of decisions were back in the day were made in terms of what was easy to print, because printing things was also really expensive. So you never really know. But anyway, bagpipes were never really designed specifically for 440 is my educated guess there.
That seems reasonable. There's a little plug for my friend Jeremy's bagpiping podcast. That's a Way Too Twags bagpipe and history podcast.
Yeah, well, he would know. He would probably know a lot more about these older bagpipes and the chanter design and stuff.
Yeah, and he's brought up a few times that some of these earliest, I think we'd be talking 19th century probably, maybe it's 18th century, latter half, of some of these earliest like manuscripts of piping music being written down. I can't remember the guy's name. I want to say Robert Bremner, but it might have been another one of these sort of like folklorist people who are like going around collecting tunes, right? At the beginning of this one collection, he writes, look, this doesn't fit quite onto the staff. It doesn't quite fit into music theory. This is the closest I can get to writing down what I'm hearing.
Exactly.
And so it's descriptive, not prescriptive, and it's not quite exactly what was going on.
Yes. So anyway, there's that, right? So first of all, the idea that, first of all, I think we can throw out the idea that the bagpipes should. We have that knee-jerk reaction. It's like, oh, it's written in A, but our pitch is way higher than A. It should be in A. Mm. We should go back. I think we can throw that idea out. We don't need to go back. It might be true that historically, it certainly is true that historically bagpipers were considerably lower pitched than they are today, but they were probably not way down in concert A. I don't think we need to go crazy. I do love the sound. I love popping my B-flat chanter in and just jamming out at that lower pitch. It's very cool sounding. And you, to Andrew's point here earlier, you do tend to get like a richer high hand and stuff like that. However, my next point, my next point is increasing pitch over time is not new. I have this book here. It's called Science of Music. I don't know where I got it. I got it in university at some point. But just this, like in the first couple of pages of this book, blah, blah, blah. It's talking about tuning forks. And I'd like to read an excerpt from this book.
Please do.
Science and Music by Sir James Jeans. Jeans?
Whoa, that's a fun name.
Sir James Jeans. Always take advice from noted British scientists. Anyway, but I think this is like sort of an old school physical analysis of musical sounds, but I digress. And he writes something about tuning forks, blah, blah, blah. And he's talking about how they all work and how different tuning forks would be tuned to different, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, these pitches might seem random, but these are all harmonic divisions of the 1939 internationally agreed pitch of A440, right? So 1939, a bunch of people got together. But let me tell you the story of how this came about by paraphrasing someone else. Not paraphrasing, exactly phrasing. Reading an excerpt. He says, but many other standards of pitch are still in use, and even more were in use in the past.
Hey.
Okay. The lengths of old organ pipes give us information as to the pitches which were in use in early times, and shoo, not to be confused with show, that one and the same note often had very different frequencies in different instruments. In Germany, for instance, Silbermann's great organ in Strasbourg Cathedral in 1713 had the pitch of A equals 393.
Oh, wow, 393. That'd be a rumbler, huh?
Yeah, Schnitger's organ in St. Jacobi in Hamburg, 1688, was tuned to, what do you think it's going to be?
I'm going to guess it's something more extreme on the other end. Let's say like 470.
Wow. Respect. It's actually A equals 489. Nearly four semitones higher. And this was not the worst, for the church pitch of northern Germany had been given by Pretorius in 1619 as A equals 567.
Whoa. I didn't realize it ever gone that high. That's crazy.
That's a full six semitones higher than that of the Strasbourg organ. Not only secular music, okay, which in those times was like, yikes, secular music. Why would you do such a thing? Secular music was often played in a substantially higher pitch than sacred music, so that there was a chamber pitch, which was quite distinct from church pitch. There were similar variations in other countries. In England, Father Smith's organ in Trinity College, Cambridge, was, and this was in 1759, was tuned to A equals 395, while Bernhard Schmidt's organs in the Durham Cathedral and the Chapel Royal gave A equals 474. Point one, more than three semitones above the Trinity organ. Early in the 18th century, which I always have to remind myself, that would mean early 1700s, efforts were made to make musical pitch more uniform, but it still ranged from about 415 to 430 for A. It stayed fairly stationary within these limits for about a century, when musicians, striving for greater brilliance and keenness of tone, I think that was a key moment there. Mm. When musicians, striving for greater brilliance and keenness of tone, began again to raise the frequency. Does that sound familiar?
Sounds very familiar.
In 1879, the Covent Garden Orchestra was playing at a pitch of A equals 450. For shame. While in America, the concert pitch was as high as 460. Oh, those damn Americans. Leave it to the Americans. Went as high as 461.6. And I'm almost done. In 1859, a French government commission recommended A equals 435 as standard pitch. And this came into fairly general use in the continent. But in America, A 440. Oh, yeah. Go America. Team America, was often taken as standard, and in England, where it has been usual to tune from a C rather than A, it was, let's see, C equals 522, corresponding to A equals 438.9. But anyway, final point. In 1939, an international conference met in London and agreed on A equals 440 as a new standard for universal use, at least in broadcasting. With this standard, the frequencies of notes are those given on the table on page 22. And so anyway.
That's so recent. It's crazy how recent that is, that it would be agreed upon that 440 would be the standard.
Yeah, and I can't remember if he goes on to discuss in any more depth why the pitch went up. But we saw a really big clue in there. People were seeking a better, more brilliance of tone. Yeah. And I forget where I've read. But the unfortunate bottom line is even grumpy bagpipers who don't like the fact that pitch has risen over time and they don't like how the new bagpipe sounds and they resent this and they want to go back to the old ways. But the unfortunate fact is when you're presented with two identical sounds, let's say you had two identical performances, one of which was ever so slightly higher in pitch than the other one. So picture they were... this is obviously not realistic, but picture you had two performances that were identical in every respect, except one was slightly higher in pitch than the other. Unfortunately, even for the grumpies among us, you would still prefer the higher to the lower. And it's just a sort of a well-known, heavily documented, quasi-psychological fact, and it's just the way that it is. And so... how they had to resolve it in classical music or in the Western music community was they had to get together eventually and decide on a universally set pitch for low A and stuff. And low A, I guess middle A or whatever on the organ. Mm-hmm. They had to come together and decide on that because otherwise it was absolute anarchy, Wild West. People were going wild and crazy, which sounds a lot like the bagpipe world. And remember, going back to what I said before, the bagpipe evolved separately from Western music as we know it. And by the way, we still haven't really fully joined the Western music world, have we? It's not like we don't hang out and jam with orchestras very often, maybe every now and then, require special equipment. But we have our own musical community. We've got our competitions and everything. solo competitions obviously don't require you to match pitch to anyone. So you just have to be in tune relative to yourself. And then in pipe bands, you're just going head to head against other pipe bands, and there's no other types of instruments involved. And so what you end up with is the Wild West pitch rules again, right? Yeah. And then if I'm going to compete against Jim, and Jim and I play exactly the same quality, but
which
Jim's,
we would, of course.
Of course we would.
As well.
Yeah. And then Jim is ever so, you know, Jim kind of like ever so slightly was able to produce a sweeter pitch. Guess what? I think in a large enough sample size, Jim's going to win. Mm-hmm. Right. And we see that. I mean, we experienced that. I feel like SFU Pipe Band, when I was in the band, 2002 through 2007, right? That was an era where the pitch was changing pretty rapidly. It was going up. And I remember we would raise the pitch every year to try to catch Field Marshal, but they too would raise the pitch a little bit. We were always just a little bit behind them in pitch. And I mean, of course, Field Marshal is known for their brilliance of tone, but it's certainly not a coincidence that while it was still reasonable to do so, the pitch inched its way up over time, because it just works.
It's interesting to me to think too about the current sort of revolution happening in Scottish small piping, where sets in C are really popular right now. And I wonder if part of that is that we become, I mean, of course, there have been sets in D have been reasonably common, but they can be somewhat challenging to play and sometimes can be a little harsh. So that maybe is a bridge too far. Maybe they go a little too far sometimes. But then we're so accustomed to hearing Scottish small pipes in A that then it might be as simple as, at least a contributing factor, is hearing the same thing but in C. It's like a key change in the middle of a song where it goes up a third. It just feels cool. There's something exciting about that.
Indeed.
But is it sustainable, Andrew? I think that's the thing, right? At what point do all Highland Piper bands hit the ceiling? We can't go any further than that. And then do we collectively reset? Or what do we do?
No, we're not going to collectively reset. But what you will have found if you look at the last 10 years is that pitch isn't going up very much anymore. And it's kind of settled out. I think it's like, you know, unless there was a significant change in design of the instrument, I don't see pitch going up that much higher from where we are now. Although everybody would want to, right? It might give you an edge. If you could maintain a good, sweet quality of the instrument. Yeah, it's very interesting what's going on right now, which is all the top bands are looking for chanters that were made in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because they use the magic plastic that's now, I think it's now illegal to produce
it's like the cancer
with that plastic
or something, right?
That's right. So you're not allowed to turn that plastic anymore. This is amateur hour here on the podcast. But I don't think you're allowed to use that material anymore. But for whatever reason, that material produces superior tone. Mm. And anyway, all the bands are looking for that. But the pitch was much lower then, right? So what you're finding is, you're going and you're finding these slightly older chanters, which do produce this really sweet tone for some reason. No one really knows why. But then the bottom hands are carved to smithereens, huge oval holes, because in order to get the pitch like anywhere close to modern pitch, it requires major Frankensteining to the chanters. But it's a fascinating moment we're in now.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It occurs to me, too, that I know that in the world of recorders, like Baroque era music, kind of record, like recorder trios and quintets and stuff, there are other standards for tuning. If you were to go buy a recorder, you could get one with changeable feet. So it would be like modern tuning, Baroque era tuning, etc.
Yes.
And so that's another little pocket of music that kind of has its own standards still preserved. And I wonder if we could settle at some point in bagpiping, even if it's not on a concert pitch, B flat. What is that, 466? Even if it's not that, maybe we could settle somewhere and be like, this is now International Highland Bagpipe pitch. Let's shoot for that.
And then the question is like, and then I suppose the deeper question is, do you really want that?
Mm.
So like, what do you lose? I mean, Matt McIsaac was telling me about there's some sort of like mysterious frequency, like 432 or something, where if you play at those frequencies, like plants grow twice as fast and stuff.
Ah.
Have you heard about this?
I've seen a South Park episode where they discovered a special frequency, but the effects were not that. So that's not quite the same thing. But I got it. I hear you.
but anyway, so apparently there's secret frequencies out there that put you in tune with different dimensions and stuff. So I guess my point is, if you box yourself in to a certain standardized pitch, is that actually what you want? Is there something interesting out there, just a little bit higher than we are now? Or will engineering change things? Or will there be a movement back to a lower pitch? Are there opportunities for that? And so, you know, it's all very interesting. I think that I don't really think anything is going to change in the competition scene. I don't see it happening.
Importantly, this does bring us back around to aliens.
Okay.
We might be able to make contact if we just get our pipes to the correct pitch.
Yes, I think so.
I really wanted to force that to be the ending note for the episode there.
Oh, I see. I did hesitate, so we could still do it.
Yeah.
Is there anything left in Andrew's question that is yet to be addressed?
Let's see. We could drill a little bit more into what do we do about how judges would, as he says, you get slagged if you're pitched lower. Should we have any expectations that judges would be like aware of this and trying to compensate for it in their own heads? Or should we just accept that this is a fact and not blame the judges for liking the way it sounds when your competitor is a little higher?
Yeah. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Yeah. The bottom line is, if you're drastically lower pitch than your competitors, it tends to be a major detractor. So then you have three kinds of judges. You have a judge like me who, honestly, I don't care what pitch you play at. I honestly don't. And I would be aware that this is a much lower pitch than everybody else. And I honestly could care less. And I might actually listen for the merits of a lower pitch. So that's me. Then you have some judges who are also quite aware of pitches. And then when they hear the lower pitch, they're like, time out. No, don't like it.
Do
garbage.
Not like.
Don't do that. So then you have people who are aware of it, who just aren't going to like the lower pitch, and they're going to penalize you for it. What's interesting is I know several of these judges, and they're really great judges, but they're of the opinion that low pitch is bad. You need to be at a similar pitch to everyone else in the field. Right or wrong, I don't know. Hit us in the comments. Tell us what you think. And then there's the third kind of judge, which in my opinion is probably the most common, where pitch differences probably honestly don't cross their mind particularly. Like, it's not even something they would listen for, right? And then in that case, on average, the higher of the pitches will be perceived to be better sound, just better sound.
So right? It's not like a lack of awareness and not caring. It's more like maybe not realizing and definitely being influenced by it.
Yeah, like it might not even be on that judge's radar. You know what I mean? Or it might be. But I think there's probably quite a few there who really aren't even, it's not that they're unaware of it. It's just that they're probably not even really particularly concerned with it, right? So it all has to do with what kind of judge you are. And so anyway, but I think the cost-benefit analysis of rigidly sticking with lower pitch probably isn't a good payout for a competitor. So generally speaking, a competitor will want to be aware of the pitch other people around you in your competitions are playing and making sure that you're in that same ballpark, because otherwise it could be a detractor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also I would recommend not being too crazy religious about it. And also, if someone is way too high in pitch, you're also quite likely to be penalized.
You know, but there is a limit. You can go too high.
For sure. And again, Jim, like me personally, if someone comes out sky high in pitch, to me, I wouldn't mind one way. I'm going to give it an honest listen, and I'm not going to harshly judge someone for being super high. If they're able to achieve a sweet tone, I might say something like, wow, high pitch, but sweet tone, pretty good job. Like the actual, it doesn't really bother me one way or the other. But then I've also judged on panels where the band comes out with a high pitch and all the other judges are like, wow, I gave them last because wow, that pitch, oh my God, the pitch was so bad. And I'm thinking like they played pretty tightly together and the sound was good even though it was really high. But some judges are just like, walk the plank.
Do you feel like some judges might notice a really high pitch and go, oh, you're trying to, that's almost like cheating? and be like, and for that reason, it becomes like a negative rather than a positive?
Yeah, possibly there's a little bit of that. Who knows? Mm. Possibly there's a little bit of that. Where it's like, oh, I don't like this, increasing pitch year to year. It's something I don't mm-hmm. like because we're not supposed to like it because it's just bad. And so therefore, a band that comes out that's noticeably high is going to be on my list of bands to walk the plank.
Yeah. And Andy does mention in here that like when you get to higher pitches, it gets harder to balance the top hand, especially. And that I've sure noticed
that. That's not necessarily true at all. However, if you're playing a chanter that was designed in an era where pitch was typically lower, and let's say you put a modern reed that's designed for higher pitch in a chanter that's designed for lower pitch, yeah, problems can arise.
They're mismatched, but, huh?
Yeah, I don't buy into that argument particularly at all. I find that most pipers struggle to quote-unquote balance the high hand no matter what gear they're using.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I think that's a fork in the road. Maybe we can go down some other time.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily true at all. Higher pitch is not necessarily harder at all. Maybe it is. Like maybe if you got a chanter maker in here, they would tell you, oh yeah, no matter what you do, as the pitch goes higher, it's harder to make a chanter with a good sound. But I don't think that's actually the case. I think it's kind of down to math, right? Yeah. Like I do think it's like Google Maps isn't going to run that well on an iPhone 3. At this point, right?
Yeah, sure.
You could probably get it to work, but there's like a disparity in what are the reed makers making reeds for? They're making reeds for modern chanters. So if there is a modern issue with balancing the chanters, it might just be a design gap or something, maybe.
Well, and I'm not sure where Andy lives. It could be a geography challenge too.
Sure.
I definitely feel like living at high altitude myself, a B-flat chanter, I can actually have a high G. A standard chanter, my high G is taped to a sliver to get things into tune.
And then in my experience, there's a lot of things we'd want to look at to fix that high G before we looked at whether it was the pitch of the chanter that was the problem. That could be a fun topic for a future episode. And I'm also not suggesting that Andrew, the person who wrote in the question, I'm not suggesting that he doesn't know what he's doing or whatever. I would want to tick a lot of boxes before I jump to the conclusion that, oh, it's just this gosh darn high pitch that's causing my high hand problems.
I know for myself, there are definitely some mental blowing anomalies that happen at the top end. I definitely tend to squeeze a little harder, stuff like that.
Sure. But also misunderstanding how chanter tuning actually works is the most common issue with chanter balancing. For example, just as a quick teaser to a future episode, if your bottom hand is flat on your chanter, should you sink the reed?
I was going to say yes, but now I feel unsure.
The answer is sinking the reed will make the problem worse, not better.
Hmm.
Right? Because your bottom hand is flat relative to the high hand. Okay? So if you sink the reed, okay, the high hand will sharpen more than the bottom hand. So now the bottom hand is even flatter relative to the high hand. And by the way, what very commonly happens as you play and as moisture settles into the reed, the bottom hand tends to get a little bit flat. And so you have an infinite regress there where people keep sinking the reeds, misunderstanding what actually needs to happen there. You keep sinking the reed, so the high hand gets sharper and sharper relative to the bottom hand. By the way, this is a balance issue because now what's the only option you can utilize to try and fix the top hand? Sounds suspiciously, Jim, like what you just said you do to your high G, right? Which is it gets covered with tape, right? Yeah. And so you just end up just stuck at the point where, you know, your chanter barely works, and that's where you end up leaving it. But really, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how it's supposed to work. So like when people say, I just can't balance my chanter due to this new high pitch, I think to myself, And by the way, this might seem like I might be coming off extremely arrogant and pompous here, but let's finish the episode by saying I made these mistakes for 20 years or so before I finally picked up enough clues to realize what was going wrong. Anyway, to conclude, bagpipe pitch is very much the Wild West, and it's an unregulated thing. And then it's like up to you what the cost benefit analysis is of going with a lower pitch, trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's all up to you. most high-level competitors end up just making sure their band or their own solo bagpipe is in the soup of what people are currently doing, and that tends to be what people go with.
Hey everybody, Andrew Douglas here from the Piper's Dojo, and I just want to say thanks so much for listening to today's iteration of the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, it would be super helpful to us and to a lot of bagpipers out there trying to find us if you could give us a top-notch review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this podcast, particularly Apple, iTunes, and Spotify, and things like that. Your review would be really, really helpful. So if you have a moment today, definitely go over there and help us out. Other than that, until we meet again on the podcast or somewhere else, thanks again for listening.